So welcome everyone to the fourth series of the Treasure Seminar and our fifth talk of the four series. And we're very happy today to have Professor Sharman Hatley, who's a Associate Professor of Asian Studies and Religious Studies at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. He completed an interdisciplinary liberal arts degree at Goddard College in 1998. And then studied Indology and Religious Studies at the University of Pennsylvania. His doctoral thesis on the Brahmayamala and Shaiva Yogini cults was completed in 2007 under the direction of Harunaga Isaacson, after which he taught at Concordia University, Montreal, from 2007 to 2015. His research mainly concerns early tantric Shaivism, goddess cults, and yoga. Recent publications include the Brahmayamala Tantra or Pitumata, Volume 1, Chapters 1 to 2, 39 to 40, and 83, Revelation, Ritual, and Material Culture in an Early Shaiva Tantra. Currently, his projects include a monograph on the figure of the Yogini in early medieval India and critical editions and studies of the Brahmayamala, Devi Purana, and Kaula Jnana Nirnaya. So, Sharman, thank you very much for coming, and over to you.
Thank you. Thank you for that kind introduction and for inviting me. I'm sorry I had to postpone the talk once, but I'm very pleased that it worked out and I'm able to be with all of you today. So the topic of my paper is what I'm calling Lineage Teachings, Sampradaya in Tantric Shaivism. I do have a paper which I'll read. I hope it doesn't become too tedious that way. So, Mantra Marga or Tantric Shaivism envisions the supreme deity Shiva as the ultimate source of tantric scriptural revelation, whose essence is mantra. Scripture's avatarana, its descent into the world, mirrors the creation of the universe. Revelation is a process of emanation that begins with the undifferentiated sonic essence of scripture and culminates in the linguistic form, the tantras, in all their profusion and cultic diversity. In fact, not only the tantras, but all revelation has Shiva as its source, including the Vedas, and in some accounts, shockingly, even Buddhist and Jain scripture. The prototype for this model of revelation is found first in the Nishwasa Tattva Sanghita, the oldest of what came to be called the Siddhanta Tantras, that is, scriptures of the Shaiva Siddhanta. In its classical form, this model has the five faces of Sadashiva reveal five streams of the Shaiva revelation, the Shaiva Siddhanta from the upper face, and four subsidiary streams, the Vama Tantras.
No, you didn't.
Well,
could you mute, please, whoever you are?
The five streams of revelation, the Shaiva Siddhanta, and the Vama Tantras focused on Tumbru and the Four Sisters, Bhuta Tantras and Garuda Tantras, representing two branches of what some people call tantric medicine, and the more ritually transgressive Bhairava Tantras. Sadashiva, whose body is mantra, bridges the absolutely transcendent Nishkala Shiva and the immanent Sakala Shiva of many names, the Shiva of mythology. And this diagram simply shows the five faces of Sadashiva diagrammatically, and the five streams of revelation envisioned as emerging from these. So the early Bhairava Tantras include the so-called Mantrapita revelation, dedicated to various forms of Bhairava, as well as Tantras of the Vidyapita. The latter, at least in cultic terms, are Shakta, or goddess-oriented. The supreme deity is a goddess, such as Kali, or a divine couple, forms of Bhairava and Bhairavi. These Shakta or goddess-oriented tantric sources not only inherited a model of revelation centered upon the male deity Sadashiva, but also a cosmology emphasizing male deities, various Mantreshwaras and Rudras, who preside over the hierarchy of ontic principles, tattvas, and worlds that constitute creation. One of the questions that has long engaged my attention is the manner in which Vidyapita Tantras reconceptualized this Shaiva cosmological vision and model of revelation. Today, I am concerned with a small slice of this topic, namely, some of the ways in which goddesses came to be viewed as sources of tantric revelation. This is a work of progress, work in progress, and your suggestions will be very much appreciated. The Vidyapita Tantras and the Kala revelation that followed place emphasis upon the figure of the Yogini or Yogeshwari. This is a goddess typology shared with Vajrayana Buddhism, as you know. And let me also note that while Yogini and Dakini are more or less synonymous in Vajrayana traditions, this is not the case in Shaivism, which is why I restrict myself here to the category named Yogini. In the Vidyapita Bhairava Tantras, Yoginis are deities of great power and potential danger, characterized by qualities such as having animal faces, the power of flight, appearance in groups, and organization into clans or kulas. These clans are usually headed by goddesses known as the Ashtamatris, the eight mothers or eight mother goddesses. Integral to the category Yogini is its blurring of boundaries between the divine and human. For this category of goddess represents a state of being female initiates could attain through ritual perfection. The tantric practitioner, the sadhaka, usually represented as male, sought visionary, power-bestowing encounters with yoginis, called melaka or melapa, rendezvous or encounter. Such encounters are arguably the principal ritual aim in Vidyapita systems, leading to extraordinary powers, siddhi, even to apotheosis as Bhairava himself. More relevant for my topic today is that these encounters could entail yoginis imparting esoteric knowledge. So yoginis are presented as guardians of tantric revelation, and in some cases as agents in its transmission. In the former role, they are powerful and potentially dangerous guardians of esoteric tantric teachings, even enforcers of initiatory secrecy. So they have this function as enforcers of tantric secrecy already in the Vinashika Tantra, which is the only scripture of the archaic leftward stream of scriptures that seems to survive intact. Here we find the following warning, and I'll just read the English translations. I've included the Sanskrit on most of the slides also. There may be points worth discussing. Those who take up mantras on their own, non-believers, critics of the Veda, breakers of the initiatory pledges, desecrators of the tantras, those intent on harming the gurus, and those who violate the essence of the tantras, they are called dharmalopaka, violators of dharma, and are always destroyed by yoginis. The Kechari Vidya of Adinath depicts the danger of yoginis even more ominously, saying, "He who would reveal this ultimate scripture to just anyone is rapidly devoured by yoginis by Shiva's command." These warnings echo the dangers that yoginis and related female beings, such as Shakinis, present in the context of cremation ground rituals, where lapses or cowardice can prove fatal. Yoginis play a different kind of role in the revelation narrative of the Brahmayamala, one of the oldest surviving Vidyapita Tantras, perhaps of the late 7th or early 8th century. This narrates the descent of scripture into the world and follows its vicissitudes over multiple cosmic cycles, culminating with the transmission of the Brahmayamala itself. Here, yoginis feature in the final stage of revelation. At the end of the Kali Yuga, impelled by the supreme Shakti, they snatch away whatever vestiges of scripture remain in the world and withdraw these into their original source, the Shakti Tattva, at the apex of the cosmic hierarchy. Yoginis, however, are also attributed positive roles in revelation. In the Siddhi Yogeshwari Mata, for example, the alphabet, or Matrika, is identified as a goddess, Raudriya Rudra Shakti, and as the primordial matrix of both mantras and tantric revelation. The alphabetical matrix is also called Yogini Mukha or Yogini Vaktra, the mouth of the yogini. And in fact, this is likely the earliest occurrence of the term in the 7th to 8th century. Later sources, including works of the Kashmirian non-dualist Shaiva exegetes, came to posit that the Kala revelation emerged from a sixth face of Sadashiva, identified with his Shakti or power, the goddess, either a transcendent upper face, above the upper, Urdhvarudva, or a hidden lower face, called among other names the netherworld face, Patalavakra, or the mouth of the Yogini. Here Yogini refers to Shiva's ultimate power, the goddess of many names, the source of myriad Shaktis who pervade the cosmos, enacting Shiva's volition. In other words, the most esoteric Shaiva revelation, which is Shakta in its cultic orientation, and tends towards non-dualism, derives from the goddess. I turn now to the question that inspired this short paper. As I began to read Shaiva sources connected with Yoginis for my doctoral thesis many years ago, I encountered several variations on an ambiguous promise of reward. Here is one example, again from the Siddha Yogeshwari Mata. Pujyo bhavati sarvatra viresha padakankshakaha yogastasya pravartita sampradayam chavindati. The sadhaka, aspiring to the state of Bhairava, Lord of Heroes, becomes revered in all respects. The powers of yoga commence for him, and he discovers, Vindati, the teachings of the lineage, Sampradaya. Here, this is a generic statement of reward for someone who guards the sanctity of the Tantra and of the Gurus. Elsewhere, it occurs in statements on the ultimate fruits of Tantric ritual. The meaning of Sampradayam Chavindati is not readily transparent. The root vid, to know, here conjugated in the third class, likely means she or he finds or discovers, although learns is also still possible. As for Sampradaya, this familiar word generally means something along the lines of tradition or lineage, in the sense of knowledge passed down through a lineage of gurus. We may for the moment provisionally interpret this as meaning teachings of the lineage. In other words, Sampradayam Chavindati seems to mean, and he discovers the lineage teachings or teachings of the lineage. The very same phrase appears once elsewhere in the Siddha Yogeshwari Mata, thrice in the Brahmayamala, and once in the Buddhist Lagushambhara Tantra, which, as Alexis Sanderson demonstrates, drew directly on Shaiva sources. The Lagushambhara Tantra verse is almost identical to the Siddha Yogeshwari Mata verse, although it's less intelligible. Some passages, such as Siddha Yogeshwari Mata 29.40, link receiving the Sampradaya explicitly to Yoginis. I'll just read the translation. After 6 months, a Yogini born of the clan of Skanda Kartikeya, or the clan of Kumari, grants Siddhi, and pleased, she bestows the Sampradaya that fulfills all wishes. This does little to clarify the content of Sampradaya, but the link it attests between Yoginis and the gift of Sampradaya proves to be a recurring theme. The Malini Vijayottara Tantra, another tantra of the Trika, places this blessing in the context of Melaka, that is, the rendezvous between a practitioner and yogini occurring as the fruition of ritual practice. The setting is typically a cremation ground or, as here, a holy place, a pita or kshetra. Then, there in the sacred field, sometimes yoginis will arrive, formidably powerful, and bestow their respective lineage teachings, sampradayam, svakam, svakam. As soon as one attains these teachings of the lineage, one becomes equal to them in might and partakes of whatever powers are desired. We learn from this that yoginis possessed varied sampradayas. We may also infer that these are differentiated according to kulas or clan identities. Identities which practitioners, in fact, also share, as established at the time of tantric initiation. Something similar is suggested by the phrasing in the Vidyapita Matasara, and I'll quote, when 2 years are complete, without a doubt, a yogini teaches the sadhaka her own sampradaya. We find confirmation for this idea in the Tantra Sadbhava, a slightly later Vidyapita Tantra, 8th to 9th century, and other sources as well. A verse in chapter 16 of this source clarifies that sampradaya is something yoginis give only to initiates belonging to their own clans. In this case, the keyword is unksha, fragment of the divine, effectively a synonym of kula or clan, in this context at least. To quote, she bestows the lineage teachings to a hero of her own clan. For someone else, after 3 months, she speaks a blessing. Here, sampradaya, as one might expect, is something confined to a lineage, and in this case, defined a lineage defined by initiatory kinship. I conclude this discussion by suggesting that, at least in the context of the sources in question, sampradaya means kula sampradaya or kaulika sampradaya, teachings of a particular goddess clan. A passage from the Siddhi Yogeshwari Mata, again, seems to confirm this interpretation. The sadhaka sees yoginis, divine yoginis, the auspicious Shivas, the terrible Dhammanikas and Davis, and Rudradakinis and Dakinis. They show him the rituals of their own respective clans as they truly are. Sorry, some of these categories are not readily translatable. These are various categories of demigoddess or powerful female spirit beings or goddesses. That's a spectrum of being. Here, what the goddesses of various clans transmit is not called sampradaya, but rather kaulika vidhi, ritual procedure of a clan, that is, of a goddess clan. While yoginis typically are classified according to the clans of the eight mother goddesses, they belong to a wider spectrum of divine and semi-divine female beings, some auspicious, and others like Dakinis, at least in Shaivism, terrifying. All of these have their own clans and lineage teachings. Looking more closely at the expression sampradaya and Shaivism, especially in the Bhairava Tantras and Kala sources, a clearer picture emerges of what it might mean to, quote, discover lineage teachings of the goddess clans. I will first review passages which shed light on the kinds of teachings and mode of instruction that sampradaya suggests, and afterwards examine instances that specify the precise content of sampradaya. Kshemaraja, a prominent non-dualist Shaiva exegete of the 11th century from Kashmir, makes a number of illuminating remarks on the term. In his commentary on the Swachanda Tantra, in an exposition on its mantras, he abruptly pauses to say, but enough of revealing the secrets of mantra, ityalam mantra rahasya pakartanena. Thinking, let not the sampradaya be broken, I have disclosed just a little. Sampradayas tu ma parichedi iti kinchit unmilitam. Here sampradaya represents something secret and sacred, not to be disclosed in writing, no more, at least, than is absolutely necessary to preserve the tradition. Elsewhere in this commentary, he invokes the category sampradaya to refer to authoritative oral instructions by his teachers in places where the textual tradition doesn't provide an answer to a particular exegetical problem. So twice elsewhere, Kshemaraja provides an etymology of the word sampradaya. His remarks on a verse from the Netra Tantra are especially noteworthy. The verse reads, maybe I'll read the scriptural verse, Guptaha susiddhito devi, prakataha siddhiha bhaved, tasmat suguptaha kartavyaha sampradayo mukhagamaha. Remaining secret, the teaching yields abundant success, O goddess. Revealed, it would ruin success. Therefore, the sampradaya, which comes forth from the mouth, that is, its mukagama, oral tradition, should be kept very secret. Kshemaraja glosses this as follows. Coming from the mouth means emerging from the mouth of the supreme Shakti. This sampradaya, consisting of the secret that has been explained above, is called such because it is given, niyate, from the root verb da, to someone after properly samyak, that's for the sum of sampradaya, ascertaining that he has had a most intense descent, pata, of Shiva's power, shakti. It is to be kept well hidden, i.e. carefully hidden, reposing within itself. As intimates the Netra Tantra, Sampradaya is secret and transmitted orally. Chemaraja posits that this secret knowledge has its origin in the very womb of wisdom, the mouth of Shakti, that is, the mouth of the yogini, the ultimate source of call of revelation. It is Sampradaya because it is transmitted only to someone who has experienced an intense descent of Shiva's power, which proves fitness to receive the most esoteric of tantric teachings. These etymologies clarify the non-dualist Shaiva vision of Sampradaya as an esoteric oral transmission derived ultimately from the goddess. Kshemaraja's call of vision of yoginis possessing secret wisdom beyond the textual canon finds corroboration in an unlikely source, the Mrigendagama, a learned scripture of the mature Shaiva Siddhanta. In its account of the streams of Shaiva revelation, it includes a brief account of a substream of scripture called the Yogini Kala, Kala teachings of the yoginis. Here the Yogini Kala is characterized as secret wisdom maintained exclusively by the yoginis. I'll translate. The yoginis obtained wisdom that immediately makes the power of yoga manifest. For this reason, it is called Yogini Kala, Kala wisdom of the yoginis. It has not emerged forth from them. The commentator, Bhatta Narayana Kanta, again a Kashmiri, adds that the yoginis obtained their knowledge from Shiva, and that this remains among them as their secret sampradaya. This Siddhantika source makes an important acknowledgement, namely that while all tantric revelation is secret, mediated by a lineage of gurus, the revelation of goddess cults is more carefully guarded and more likely to be the preserve of oral tradition. In the words of the Jayadratha Yamala, the non-hidden sampradaya is knowledge which spreads throughout the world, for its subject is exoteric, samanya vishaya. The knowledge of the yoginis is esoteric, vishesha. I turn now to a few examples where the content of sampradaya is spelled out in more detail. The Jayadratha Yamala, which I've just referred to, a composite krama work that is of the cult of Kali, belonging to the Vidyapita, contains several instances where specific tantric practices and their associated mantras are called sampradaya. Take, for instance, the brief sadhana of the naked donkey-faced goddess called Marjani Vajra, or broom banner. This is introduced as a sampradaya. Here the expression seems simply to mean esoteric oral teaching connected with yoginis. And it's a kind of hyperbole, we could say, given that the instructions for the mantra and the mantra itself are written out in full. Similarly, the scripture of the Kala Krama called the Urmi Kaularnava, or Bhogahasta, refers to its core instructions on initiation as a Kaulikam Sampradayam, lineage teachings of the goddess clans, transmitted orally by yoginis and revealed in the world by a siddha called Meena Kecharanatha. Numerous other teachings are also described as sampradayas in this text. This, in fact, emerges as a rhetorical pattern in works of the Krama, or tantric cult of Kali, Mahanaya Prakasha of Arnasingha and the Mahanaya Prakasha of Shittikanta both make such claims about multiple teachings and emphasize the oral nature of their transmission. A contrasting kind of sampradaya is presented in the Tantrasiddhava, a Vidyapita scripture that I've referred to already of the Trika, circa 8th to 9th century. The term features here in chapter 6 as one of three kinds of esoteric knowledge obtained from yoginis. This is really quite an interesting passage. I'll read it in full. My interpretation of the text is based on Mark Deitchkowski's draft edition of the text with a couple small emendations. What's more, I have taught you the ultimate essence of mantra, the supreme characteristics of the goddess, and the mantra called Heart of the Yoginis, Yogini Hridaya. And this mantra, which has come down through the lineage of transmission, is not written in a book. Rather, the clan and clan-based teachings have come down to this world through the clan lineage, Kulamnaya. And the Kula and Kalava, that is difficult to translate, the clan teachings and clan-based teachings, which have secret meanings, are not understood. But the Kula and Kaula teachings are obtained by the heroes of their respective clans. And that knowledge is threefold, divided according to how it is obtained. The first kind is Upadesha, instruction. The second is Sampradaya, the tradition. And the third is Kaulika, belonging to the goddess clans. Listen to what comes from whom. Those teachings obtained from the home of a yogini are instruction. Those obtained from deity yoginis are Sampradaya, spoken by Shiva. Those given by flying yoginis are Kaulika, no doubt. This fascinating passage offers a threefold taxonomy of esoteric knowledge obtained from yoginis, based on an implicit hierarchy. Yoginis living in the world, that is, female tantric adepts, yoginis who are goddesses, and Khechadis, the ultimate yoginis who traverse the skies. All three types seem to represent what our sources call sampradaya, usually called sampradaya, though here the term is reserved for the intermediate category of knowledge, whose ultimate source is Shiva. In all cases, this esoteric knowledge appears to be imparted orally to sadhakas who belong to the same kula or initiatory clan. Here too, of course, the categories are essentially rhetorical and theoretical. The Tantrasadbhava generally delineates even the most esoteric mantras without too much effort at concealment. The final example I wish to share is from the Brahmayamala. Its 14th chapter is devoted to a mantra called the Kula Vidya, the Vidya mantra or goddess mantra of the goddess clans. And a mandala, also called the Khechadi Chakra, or Wheel of the Sky Travelers. This is not specifically called a sampradaya, but is represented as such, a tantric teaching of the yogini clans. It is, moreover, specifically designated as a teaching for female tantric adepts. One of its remarkable features is its threefold classification of human yoginis, based on how they received transmission of the Kula Vidya mantra. I'll read the passage. One whose mother and father both possess the wisdom, and whose mother would bestow the Kula Vidya to her while in the womb, is known as a wisdom in the womb yogini. At the age of half of 30 years, she certainly obtains the wisdom. The mother fully possesses the wisdom, but the father has no entitlement. She is one born in a clan. Her mother would whisper the Kula Vidya in her ear for 6 months when she is born. After 24 years, the wisdom arises in her. She in whom the wisdom would arise through ritual, consuming the oblation gruel, through the path of deity worship, or through consuming the secret nectars, she is known as the newcomer. The perfected yogini shall attain siddhi in this order, without a doubt, possessing vast troves of wisdom. A remarkable view of female tantric adepts emerges in this passage, which I have discussed elsewhere in some detail. As this passage indicates, women's attainment may be congenital, predicated on birth to initiates, either the mother alone or both parents, as well as matrilineal transmission of the highly esoteric Kula Vidya mantra. Whatever the social reality may have been, this passage highlights the idea that women and goddesses may possess tantric teachings that are mediated neither by the texts nor by the established male-dominated lineages of gurus. This is, again, a rhetorical claim, for the Brahmayamala explains the Wheel of the Sky Travelers in full detail. Despite so many indications of the oral or even, in some cases, non-verbal nature of knowledge obtained from yoginis, several Shaiva texts attribute their revelation to the goddesses, primarily by indirect means. Rather than attempting a thoughtful conclusion to this paper, let me wind up by drawing closer connections between my topic and this seminar's theme. I will discuss several examples of inspired Shaiva texts. Rather than treasure texts, we could perhaps call these secret lineage teachings, inspired by the expression Rahasya Sampradaya, which Kshemaraja once uses. These secret lineage teachings include a text called the Urmikolarnava, which I've referred to. A fascinating case, and the earliest of these examples, is that of the Shiva Sutras of Vasugupta, however. This is a work from the second half of the 9th century that was seminal to the Kashmirian non-dualist exegetical tradition. Commentators on this work narrate a revelation with several variations. According to Kshemaraja, Shiva himself appeared to Vasugupta in dream, thinking, "Let not the secret sampradaya," that's the expression Rahasya Sampradaya, "be lost, since the world is almost entirely devoted to dualism." He directed Vasugupta to a slab of stone on a mountain where he discovered the sutras. Vasugupta was deemed fit for Shiva's grace on account of being Parameshwara Nana Yogini Siddha Sat Sampradaya Pavitra Ridayaha, one whose heart was purified by the teachings of the true lineage, Sat Sampradaya, received from numerous Shaiva yoginis and siddhas. The sutras are scriptural in the sense of originating from Shiva, but beyond the received traditions of scriptural literature and linked explicitly to extra-scriptural teachings of charismatic siddhas and yoginis. Several later works of Krama literature bear mention here as well. In the conclusion to his Mahanaya Prakasha, Arna Singha, from the second half of the 11th century, claims that the text came from oral instructions of his guru, which were expanded or augmented by lineage teachings derived from a Paramilapa, the ultimate assembly of yoginis. Another Kashmirian work of the sutra genre, named after its author Vatulananta, ascribes its revelation directly to yoginis. According to the commentator Ananda Shakti, the sutras were revealed to Vatulananta during a Mahamilapa, similar expression, by Piteshwaris, goddesses of the Karavira cremation ground in Udiana, in Kashmir, Swat Valley, I guess. Their revelation was preceded by another form of instruction, however. The Piteshwaris first taught Vatulananta a sequence of cryptic utterances, probably vernacular verses in code, called Choma Paddas. A third related example is the Maharta Manjari of Maheshwarananda, a South Indian author writing in Chidambaram around the beginning of the 13th century. He attributes his composition to the inspiration of a visionary encounter with a yogini, probably in dream. As Whitney Cox analyzes, this unfolded in stages. First, a liminal encounter with a yogini who communicated through mysterious gestures and cryptic words in Maharashtri Prakrit. Then a meeting with his guru, who interpreted her gestures and mysterious words. This was followed by Maheshwarananda's composition of the Prakrit verses that comprise the Maharta Manjari, and then by his Sanskrit commentary, the Maharta Manjari Parimala. The wisdom of the yoginis is always several steps, it seems, removed from the bounded material form of Sanskrit text. Thank you.